WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today is the monthly visit of Nan Calvert, and I am very excited about the guests that she has assembled in our studios for this important conversation, primarily about the Pike River Restoration Project, which is an extraordinary undertaking already underway and with more phases still to come. First of all, Nan has invited into our studios her colleague from Root Pike Wynn, Dave Giordano, who is the executive director. And we are also very pleased to have with us in the studios Jim Cruiser, who is, of course, Kenosha County Executive. He has held that office since 2008. And, of course, ahead of that, he was a state representative for a number of years. And so he brings a long memory when it comes to Kenosha County governance and has a passionate interest in the issues tied up with the Pike River restoration. So we have an important conversation ahead of us, and we welcome you all to the morning show, Nan Calvert, Dave Giordano, and Jim Cruiser. Glad you're here.
Thank you. So glad happy to be here.
Glad to be here.
So
Nan, tell us what precipitated your invitation to Dave Giordano and Jim Cruiser to join us today.
Well, you know, so the star of this segment is the Pike River. And so what we're going to talk about today is the process and the progress of its restoration, which is incredibly important to us all because clean water is important to us all. So whether you live close to it or you don't live terribly close to it, clean water is what connects us. And so this segment is about how partners can come together to affect great and good change for everybody. And so it's at a critical phase at this point. That's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the history leading up to that. And hopefully this will precipitate other shows in the future as we move forward. So, yes, this is about the future of the Pike River.
Remind our listeners about the Pike River itself, where it begins, where it ends, where it goes through, and just a little more to help us understand its significance to us.
Sure. And actually, I'm going to let Dave Giordano do that.
Okay. Good morning, and thanks for having me. The Pike River is really part of our history, part of our heritage, and it's really made up of three segments. You have a north branch that runs south from Mount Pleasant into the main branch, which flows from about Petrified Springs down through the Kenosha Country Club area and then out past Carthage College and into Lake Michigan. We also have a south branch that runs from just north of Highway 50, parallels Highway 31, all the way up through Hawthorne Hollow, and then meets up with the north branch at Petrified Springs. So we're excited because this project we're going to talk about today really focuses on the south branch, which is in critical need of restoration.
Very good. And, of course, the third person in the room with us, again, is Kenosha County Executive Jim Cruiser. Jim Cruiser, ahead of us, talking about this very specific project, which I know is near and dear to you. Maybe you could just say a quick word about what prompted you to want to get into public service as a state representative for many, many years, and of course now Kenosha County Executive since 2008. What was the impetus for you to enter this particular arena?
Well, thank you. I went to a very fine university called UW Parkside. I was able to get an undergraduate degree in which I had the opportunity to intern with Congressman Les Aspin, who was a very distinguished and very bright congressman. Learned about constituent work in his home office, and then realized that federal government wasn't my cup of tea, and went more for local government, and majored in political science. I was student body president at Parkside for a couple of years, went on for my master's in public administration, and then went on to work for John Collins, in which one of our our jewel of parks, Petrifying Springs Park, has the Pike River going through it. Now, I grew up hunting, fishing, being all over basically the north and the east side of the state within many lakes with my family. And people joke that when I retire next year, what are you going to do? Well, my wife and I are going to hit a number of national parks we haven't hit yet. Scouting had a big impact on me. I'm the father of two Eagle Scouts and environmentally grounded. And when you have a team like Nan and Dave here that really get into the important details that maybe a county doesn't have the time to get at and go after money, we've gotten hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars, actually, with the Pike River, actually millions of dollars, to support the reclamation we've done in Phase 1 and Phase 2. We're already doing the planning for Phase 3. If you haven't seen the erosion controls and the sustainability, which will last, 50 years if you do nothing, a little bit of maintenance, it'll last 100 years, and the quality air or the water quality that occurs and the wildlife that comes back is just phenomenal, and it just becomes even more of a joy for people to enjoy when they recreate with their families walking along or biking along on those paths along the river.
How long have you been such a fervent environmentalist? I mean, from the start of your career in public office, has this been front and center, or is this a concern or a passion that has, in a sense, kind of come to you gradually or become more and more paramount to the way you have governed?
Well, people joke about me carrying a plastic bag into a park and then having it full when I leave to throw it away with the garbage I pick up. But it's just been a habit of mine. But it's one of those things that you really get to hone down what's a good environmental project and what's an over-the-top one. I'm just going to say that. One that stands the test of time for the average citizen that they can understand and get the return on investment. A lot of what the Warren Knowles, our Republican governor, stewardship fund funds. And you have to go through some pretty tough metrics to get those dollars. And when I was in the legislature, I was always interested in how that process worked, what their criteria were, and how tough the competition is in that. And I think it's good that you have to do your homework because you want it to be of a project that stands the test of time and has some meaningful return on the environmental investment.
So this Pike River restoration, let's get a sense, Dave, of when this project began, Phase 1, and under whose auspices did it begin?
Well, like I said earlier, the South Branch has a lot of issues, and we have a great model of success in the North Branch, which the Village of Mount Pleasant has restored over the last 15 years. So that entire 5 miles of the North Branch has been restored. The South Branch has always been on our radar as an organization, but it hasn't been till probably about 5 or 6 years ago when we started to tap into the resources of the Village of Mount Pleasant, their perspectives, how they did things, along with the Army Corps, who we were partnering with, and said, now that you're done with the North Branch, why don't you come take a look at the South Branch? Because it mirrors the North Branch in the issues and the solutions. We're fortunate that we, you know, we work with Kenosha County, and they're a partner that is willing to take on big problems with bold leadership. We wouldn't be here today without the county executive's team and the county executive championing this, saying, yes, this is a good idea, not just for water quality or not just for habitat or not just for bike trails, but when the project is complete, it will create a better community brand. And that benefits everybody. That benefits your walkers, your bikers, your fishermen, your investors, your developers, your commercial properties, your residential properties. It has this massive, long-lasting, layered effect, and that's why we're so excited about it.
For those of you just joining us, today is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the morning show, and with her is her colleague from Root Pike Wind, Dave Giordano, the executive director, and also with us is County Executive Jim Cruiser, Kenosha County Executive. And we are talking primarily today about the Pike River Restoration Project and this new phase that we are hoping will be beginning very, very soon. So, Nan, explain this notion of restoration, which suggests that something used to be one way and then became something else and needs to be restored to what it once was. So take us into that intriguing term of restoration.
Yes, so that is the most commonly used term, restoration, to restore an area to high quality habitat and functioning ecosystems. In a sense, you can think about it as a reintroduction, a reinvitation, because long before, all of the stuff that you see around you was here, buildings and grass and all of those things, it was all native ecosystems, wall to wall, top to bottom. But then things changed, and particularly with wetlands, they were drained and cleared of their native vegetation in order to make way for agriculture. Forests were cleared to make way for agriculture. Prairies were tilled under to make way for agriculture. And then things evolved along those lines for a very long time. And now what we've realized is that, especially without highly functioning wetlands, we run into a lot of problems, especially in terms of water quality, and also flooding. And so you can think about wetlands as being a sponge, or even more so, the kidneys of the earth. Mm. And they have a job, and their job is to take up surface water, hold it, cycle it through, filter it, all the while providing habitat for myriad species, not just plants, but birds, mammals, amphibians, reptiles, insects, and the microbiotic community as well. When you lose that, it takes a big chunk out of the matrix of life. And so some of the most important restoration projects that can be undertaken now have to do with restoring wetlands. And so, as Dave said, it benefits everybody. As Mr. Cruiser said, it benefits everybody. It benefits all of us.
So how did those wetlands get there in the first place? Why were those wetlands there, and why were they where they were?
Well, that's a big question, Greg. So that's a whole series of shows. So you can think about it. So what we don't often see is that our area, our watershed basin, in other words, where all the water goes to, the nearest receiving body of water, has actual topography. And so water tends to collect in areas that are a bit lower than the surrounding areas. That's a terrible oversimplification, but yeah, okay. Then you have certain kinds of soils that are found in wet areas, and they're called hydric soils. They're much different than, higher elevation soils. And then you have different plant communities that tend to exist there because of all those kinds of things. And don't forget that we had glaciers move through here a very, very long time ago that left us with really interesting topography and bodies of water that other areas of Wisconsin just don't have. You also have underground water, aquifers, seeps, and all that sort of thing. It's important to remember, we were just talking about this the other day, that in terms of a wetland, you don't always see water all of the time, but you do have water that's very close to the surface and all of those other characteristics that go with it.
So
that's as short as I could make it, Greg. Sorry.
Right, that's fine. So nature put those wetlands there.
Yes,
in the first.
I could have said that. That would have sufficed, right?
It's great to have all of. So nature put those wetlands there.
Exactly.
And then human beings took them away in order to use that land in different ways.
Exactly. Now, sometimes when wetlands have been completely lost, if you will, sometimes we can go back in and try to recreate that. It's never as good as the original, but it's better than nothing. If you go to Gitzloff Park, which is a major restoration undertaking on a smaller scale, there are something called wetland scrapes. And so snow melt and rainwater collect in those scrapes and provide habitat for all kinds of creatures that depend on that kind of habitat. But again, when you lose natural wetlands, what is lost is sort of lost forever. You can try and go and recreate them, and they do work, but it's going to take millions of years for them to turn into what they once were.
Right.
When you have existing wetlands that are degraded, you can do wonders. You can return them to something highly valuable, in fact, priceless and functioning. They do what they're supposed to do.
And, of course, the best thing is to not get rid of them in the first place.
Right. But leave them alone.
Right, yeah. Right. Of course, the other factor of this, another facet of this restoration, is changing the path of the Pike River. So, Dave, explain why someone would change the path of something like the Pike River or the Root River or whatever river. Who would do that and why would they do that?
Right. Well, after settlement, farmers that wanted to farm this land realized that some of these areas were constantly wet and didn't perform the way they wanted them to. So the quickest route from point A to point B is a straight line. So what they ended up doing was creating ditches through these major wetland areas like the South Branch. And eventually they would also put drain tile under these farm fields. So most of the farm fields you see in this side of the interstate, the east side of the interstate, have drain tiles underneath as well. So they wanted to convey that water off that land as quickly as possible because it was so wet. So using tiles, ditching those streams in straight lines, that was the way to get that water off quickly. Now, worked great for the farmers, and we understand that farmers put food on our table, so we're not bashing them. That was what they needed to do to produce. And we're grateful in that regard. What we're doing now is actually undoing what they did, because there's better ways to farm now, and that's a whole nother show. And I know we've had some shows like that before, but here's the really important thing with restoration of a stream. When you re-meander it, or you put the wiggle back in these streams, you put the sinuosity, the curves and the bends and the riffles and the structure, is you're slowing that stream energy down. And one of the problems that plague the South Branch right now is because it's so straight, you've got massive erosion along the sides of the banks because you have so much stream energy. There's a number of problems that come with that erosion. It brings a lot of phosphorus into Lake Michigan because phosphorus bonds to sediment. You also have a situation where infrastructure can get damaged. We've had bridges in the area, culverts blown out, like I said, bridges repaired, and so that's an issue. But when you have that kind of volume, that flashy volume, when it rains, it quickly gets pumped off. You're essentially washing everything out that's in that stream channel. All the different types of species that want to live in those kinds of communities literally get flushed out. So that's why we have such a degraded South Branch. The practices and the solutions and the designs that we can discuss put a lot of those things back. As Nan said, it's never going to be brought back to its original state, but we're going to make a pretty darn good attempt to do as much as we can to get it as close as possible.
Right. Jim Kruiser, you said something intriguing before we even went on the air about how when that meander is restored to something like the Pike River, it's not just, I mean, this has really not a whole lot to do with the aesthetics of how pretty it looks when you have a meandering stream versus just a straight shot. But you were saying something about it not only looks beautiful, it even sounds beautiful. Mm-hmm. Didn't you say something to that effect?
Yes. Many people find a very reflective place, and we have made places in Pets where you can just sit on the edge of the stream where it ripples, and it makes that sound that you hear in movies, and we have it in our backyard, mm-hmm. and you can walk to a stretch with solitude and listen to it and ponder or be with a loved one and just enjoy it together. This is part of the value added as opposed to having a straight ditch line where it erodes, you know, at a 90-degree angle, and it just soil keeps tumbling into the river. Interesting to note, I think people should know that, you know, Chancellor Parkside, the president at Carthage, and the president at Gateway Technical College have all signed letters of support. They all have an interest, Parkside and Carthage being on the river, but also in this area. I know that Rusty Patch B is very important to Gateway, and this stretch is also gets a few extra points for helping that area, which I think is worth touching on, Dave, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible that we have the opportunity here in southeastern Wisconsin, really in centered in Kenosha County, along the Pike River, is prime Rusty Patch bumblebee habitat. The Rusty Patch is a federally endangered species. It's rapidly declining. It's what they call an indicator species. When they see that species decline, others are likely to follow. So one of the major issues regarding the Rusty Patch is their lack of native habitat. This project also will put a lot of that native habitat back, or as much as we can in the space that we have. And that's so important because if you don't have those food sources and those places to forage and overwinter, then we're going to continue to see that decline. And that, Nan can go into the ramifications on that, but we're incredibly fortunate that we have this opportunity, our generation has this opportunity in our hand to make a substantial difference in the lifestyle and the perpetuation of that species.
Obviously, with the additions at Petrifying Springs Park, having Parkside Campus with those large areas of greenery, it's really moving us forward in the needle in that area. In talking to former County Executive Jim Ladwig and current County Executive Jonathan Delagrave, both from Racine, they reflect back on and go, we hit a lot of bumps in the road. They've been very insightful, as well as people from Racine, of how to move this along quicker. And they said if the Army Corps, the gold standard of rejuvenating a stream, is on board, do it. You are moving. I mean, it took decades for them to move forward. This puts us way ahead of the game on pieces that we can manage ourselves. This is the linchpin of making a major environmental change in our community. And they said, you guys really need to try to get this done. This is a big deal for you. Hmm. And it helps them too, because, and then it helps everybody downstream.
Right.
The flooding on the Kenosha Country Golf Country Club, all the people who live on the river, and that meandering mouth by Carthage College and the city of Kenosha. Hmm. City and town officials are very much supportive of it in Summers, as well as the aldermen in the city. And very excited about the positive and how deep people are asking questions about this and how concerned. And they say it's a no-brainer to, in fact, get this done. But if they don't hear from the citizens, which is why anybody who lives in Kenosha County wants to write the county executive at KenoshaCounty.org, you don't know who your county board supervisor is, but I will forward your email of support with great dispatch to that county board supervisor and copy you back so you know who your supervisor is, so that they know that you contacted in support of this project. Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you're trying to learn some lessons from phase one of this restoration project.
Well, we've done phase one and phase two in Pets, but the big phase one in Racine County.
Right.
Really has taught us a lot. And you know, Dave approached me about 6-7 years ago, and we've been working on this internally to get to this point, never believing the Army Corps would say, here's $10 million. You pay us $5 million, and we'll help you with the most difficult, most important stretch in your community.
I'm still pinching myself that, you know, we do have this opportunity in front of us. $10 million in the grant world is incredibly unique. Mm. And, you know, I think that the average citizen might think about that as, well, you know, what kind of strings are attached? You know, is this some sort of Trojan horse? And the great thing about the fact that Mount Pleasant has done this work already, has had a partnership with the Army Corps exactly like this project, we've been able to understand how it all works. It's a massive undertaking that is predominantly funded by the Army Corps through the EPA. This is where the rusty patch comes in, because this area is prime rusty patch habitat. Mm-hmm. So follow me for a minute, because I'm going to try to put all the pieces together. This is what's amazing about doing these kinds of projects, is that you have a endangered species that helped bring funding to a federal organization that is going to help restore a river that brings almost 50 million gallons of additional flood storage, remeanders the river that doesn't have pike in it, even though it's named after the northern pike, builds an incredible corridor in the city of Kenosha and the Village of Summers community that will be public access for everybody to enjoy. And it all goes back to a little bumblebee called the Rusty Patch.
So the fact that it is federally endangered triggers these possibilities.
A piece of it.
Or yeah. a big piece of it.
Yeah. So, you know, on that connecting piece, Greg, I just wanted to get into this. You know, everybody sees the orange barrels around, and Highway 50 is going to be completed next year. And that'll have bike lanes and a sidewalk all the way from 43rd Avenue out to I-94. And then 60th Street by Indian Trail School will continue out west to 94th Court with a off-road multi-use path that will go out to 94th Court and allow access from everyone between Highway 50 and 60th Street to go up and down to Indian Trail School. This goes from 60th Street, just west of Indian Trail, all the way to Washington Road, County Trunk S. Hmm. And that's significant because that is the only north-south corridor connecting neighborhoods. And then Summers, from that point on, from S to County Trunk E, 12th Street, in the Summers plan is to put a multi-use trail in. And what that means is that once that's completed, when the long-range plan, you could bike all the way from Indian Trail and, you know, all the way from 75th Street, working your way there to 60th Street, Indian Trail all the way to S, 2E, to Parkside, down to Carthage, downtown Kenosha, and you have a connecting loop. And the quality of life and the value added for walkers, runners, bikers, families having safe havens of off-road, multi-use trails, they're a big winner. I've put in miles and miles of this through Pets and connected originally Parkside to Carthage and to the city trail. And I can tell you one thing. You tried taking those trails away, there'd be a riot. But it does affect the quality of life. People who don't even know they'll use them will be using them.
Tell us more about this term multi-use trail. I mean, what exactly are you referring to there? And is that, in a sense, kind of an official term, and must it include certain things?
Well, we try to have an 8-foot wide path. Preferably paved so that people can use it year-round and don't get it, they can use it in all kinds of weather. You see that on the old North Shore lines, the bike trail north and south of Kenosha. Kenosha County maintains those. We've paved those. 30th from Gateway Technical College all the way, or St. Peter's Church, all the way to Parkside, we've paved those off-road paths. And they're used by people, and in flat all the way through Pets and out. KR is going to have, it already has a multi-use trail all the way out to I-94 also, and it connects with the loop in Mount Pleasant, so it's not just one way. There's loops now created when we do all this. It's for, one of the most heartwarming things is out at Pets, there's an area that's very flat, and people get out with their walkers so they can get exercise in a haven of safety near the parking area. Everything is ADA in that stretch. It's not all ADA. Granted that, it's just not what multi-use paths are, but there's a number of stretches they can use, and people gravitate toward them. I mean, when you have over a million people a year using Petrovine Springs Park, if you build more of those trails, they will come. And it's one of the indicators. If you look at Austin, Boulder, Denver, Seattle, where young people and those young at heart want these type of amenities for whatever they want to do on their free time. So it's also a retention factor, hopefully, for young people to stay in our community to work, play, live, and raise a family.
David Giordano, you were saying earlier in this conversation something about additional flood storage to the tune of 50 million gallons. Explain to our listeners that term flood storage, and are we talking about the restoration of wetlands providing us with that?
Yeah, exactly. Like Nan referenced earlier, wetlands are kind of nature's sponge. They hold a lot of water. This particular area of the South Branch is mainly floodplain, and it's probably some of the most hydric soils in our watershed. So this is green infrastructure on steroids, because we know that those soils are going to hold a lot of water. There's a Purdue University study that states an acre of wetland a foot deep can hold over 330,000 gallons of water. So we know there's superhydric soils there. It's floodplain, so it's virtually impossible to develop. We're going to take this liability, which right now is a lot of erosion. We don't have any floods, real sound flood storage through this stretch, and we're going to turn it into an asset. So having those wetlands there, having that remeandering there, slows that water down and allows the wetlands to soak it up. And as the county executive mentioned, by having a multi-purpose trail, another purpose is to get people into these natural spaces that are becoming more and more rare in our community. By doing that, you get people involved, you get people engaged, and that makes a better community. I'm from Kenosha. I lived in Savannah and Atlanta, and I missed Kenosha, and I came back because I love it so much. And this is an amenity that will have a lot of functions for not only our generation, but generations to follow. And that's why I'm so proud and so fortunate to be involved in the project.
We're speaking today on the morning show with Dave Giordano and Nan Calvert from Root Pike Wynn, and with us as well is Jim Cruiser, who is Kenosha County Executive, and we are talking about the next phases of this massive Pike River restoration project. Before we talk about what is next and the stages, Jim Cruiser, I wonder if you could just say a word about what has been going on in Petrifying Springs and where we are in terms of that phase of this huge project. I mean, obviously anybody who has visited Petrifying Springs sees at least some evidence of what's going on there. And of course, this is also a point in the process when things don't necessarily look all that pretty or all that positive, but it's all working, of course, towards an important goal.
Oh, Greg, it looks pretty. I was just there and the sunflowers are just about wrapping up blooming. They're only about an inch wide. They are not the 8-inch sunflowers. But the renovation of phase two for Petrifying Springs Park, there's three phases. This was the most difficult, where we had sheeting erosion going on, vertical drops, and it just literally just falling into the Pikes River and going down the river and ending up out in Lake Michigan. Garbage trucks full of dirt every major rain. I mean, like 87, I believe, garbage trucks of sand and dirt and silt just out of Pets. We've halted a lot of that. We're gonna that moves the needle on what's going downstream. One more phase to go. It's in design right now. We've gotten a grant for that. We're getting grant on most of these things. 90-10, 80-10, 70-30, those are the things we're trying to always leverage grants. The next phase will be from where the beer garden is, where that bridge is, just by the parking area, and then all the way to the Parkside boundary line. We now have a 99-year lease or a 50-year and a 50-year renewal lease with Parkside on three more phases to go through their property, which brings the renovation down to 31st Avenue in our foreseeable future. There are some areas that the science and biology departments want to remain sensitive. They were concerned over time the erosion of it. This will, in fact, keep those intact for studies and research, but allow the public to have a safe haven through there. And we're working with them every year to build that relationship. And we're looking to continue the phases of reclamation through there, which will open up more areas and more miles of hiking, walking, riding, some of it riding, not all of it riding, but some of it, so that people can enjoy that resource. And Parkside wants to be a good neighbor. It's a neighborhood big college, and they want to welcome people in, but they want it to be done safely, and they want to be, and they're very concerned about the environment. So they're a great partner. So two phases are done, really four to go with our partner. Another big one coming up in the budget that I proposed on October 5th is the participation in the South Pike River Multi-Use Trail and River Reclamation Process project. And we've gotten a lot of support from people. But again, people should not just assume this is going to pass. People need to tell us, go to KenoshaCounty.org, hit the county executive button, email me, and I'll get it to your supervisor. They need to hear from people. They need to hear from people that say, hey, you know what, this is a good idea. I like the bike trails. Or, you know what, that's good for the young people. That's good for the young at heart. You know what, we need to be doing more of that, and this puts us on the map. If this doesn't pass, I hope it does. I think it will. But if it doesn't, this opportunity is gone. It doesn't just come back next year. They go on to the next place.
Meaning the Army Corps of Engineers.
You got it. You got it. And then instead of a reclaimed river, multi-use path connecting things, and our quality of life improving and the environment improving, we punt it down the road for someone else to do at a much higher price, if ever, to get done.
Right. By the way, what was the mechanism by which the Army Corps of Engineers potentially became part of this? Is it something you ask for, apply for?
I will tell you that Root Pike Wind has been such a phenomenal ally. Nan and Dave Giordano have continued to work with our planning and development department, and we have a grant writer, but they have pointed us in directions that have gotten us millions of dollars that add value to this community, and people don't even see it, and they go, oh, that's nice, but, you know, that's what we're doing. That's how we can afford to do these things. And it's a collaborative team. It's in the sewer pack plan. This goes back to 1983.
Wow.
That this was designated as a major area to be done. Now, why are we waiting until now? Well, quite frankly, I think people were waiting for Racine to get done, which has taken some startup time there, some learning curves, 20 years about, Dave. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's accurate.
And then when it started getting here, I said, well, Dave came into my office and said, you got to start thinking about this. And I saw the numbers. I went, wow, well, all right, we'll start doing the planning. We'll be ready. Well, sometimes you make your own luck, right? You work hard, you play by the rules, and you make your own luck by being ready, right. And that's what we are.
Speaking of luck, is it kind of bad luck that we were having a conversation about this during a drought year? This is a serious question. I mean, in terms of the average person and their concerns about flooding, the need for that, and so on, in the midst of a year of pretty severe drought in this part of the state where these concerns don't seem to be paramount before us the way they might be in a more normal year.
The good news is we got in and out quickly on the second phase at Petrifying Springs Park.
Ah.
That was the good news.
Because of the drought?
Exactly. Yeah. It made it a much easier project, and they were able to do substantial work rapidly and get in and out. And it is done now. It's buttoned up. I mean, we're going to have to go back and have some more of those seedings done, but it is done and wrapped up.
And in a normal year, it probably wouldn't be because of the delays.
But the people who live on the South Branch and the Pike River itself, let me tell you, it's in their recent memory of what happens. Nan, you can go on from there.
Well, yes, we are in a significant drought. That's true. But if you look at a little bit bigger picture, what we don't seem to enjoy and benefit from anymore are these kinds of rains that are gentle and long-lasting. So instead, we suddenly have rain, a lot of rain in a burst, and then we're done. And so then you think about, well, most of what we see is covered with impervious surface that sheet flows off, high volume, high velocity. So those wetlands and their storage capacity are going to become ever the more important as we move through the climate crisis.
Right, and as kind of the nature of the typical rainfall really changes dramatically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I still have memories of 2017 when we got, 13 inches in 3 days. I know the Kenosha County and a lot of the municipalities in this area really took a serious blow in terms of infrastructure and public safety, and businesses were shut down because they were flooded. So there's economic impacts to this as well. Yes, we're definitely in a drought year, but one of the things that I find fascinating is that a lot of the native plants that we've planted, even in my own backyard, are resilient to this drought. The ones that aren't native are the ones that seem to suffer. So, you know, it's programmed into these native plants to be able to weather these kinds of situations, no pun intended. And I think that's great. But we know that this kind of restoration works because we've seen it in Mount Pleasant. I stood at the bridge at KR in 2017 in July when all of that flooding occurred, and the bridge at KR did not flood. Upstream of that bridge is all the work that Mount Pleasant did, an incredible amount of flood storage, took hundreds of homes out of the flood plain. And that's when it really hit me that these projects work, and they're not designed to do one thing. They're designed to do many things. We talked about a number of those today, and that's where I really I'm so proud of the fact that we have a partner in Kenosha County that looks at all of those things, not just flood control or not just multipurpose trail or not just habitat, but a project like this that can do so many things for our community and have an investment from the Army Corps, you know, the nation's engineers, is just an incredible opportunity that we have to take advantage of.
Jim Kruse, remind our listeners, if people want to convey their support of this, what should they do?
Go to KenoshaCounty.org, look for the county executive, send me a note, give me your home address, I'll let you know who your supervisor is, I'll copy your concern to the supervisor. You need to do nothing after that. I'll get it to your supervisor and copy you back so you know who your supervisor is. And then we can let you know how they voted.
Very good. On this crucial next phase of the Pike River restoration. Kenosha County Executive Jim Kruse, it's great to have you back on the morning show. And we need to have one more visit with you for sure before the big R, before retirement, to look back on your long career and all the different phases of it. But I'm so glad we could have this conversation today focused on some of these issues that I know are really important to you. It was great to have you back at WGTD.
Great to be here. I'll be working full-time till April 18th, until my retirement date. So I'll be available, and I'll be back at least once.
Great. Very, very good. And Dave Giordano, Executive Director of Root Pike Wind, great to have you with us as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I'm not retiring anytime soon.
All right. Very good. Nan Calvert, I know you have a couple of quick announcements.
I do. Two important things that everybody should know about. The first one is Hawthorne Hollow's Harvest Hootenanny on October 16th from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. You will be able to enjoy hay rides, crafts, some creepy crawly friends from the Racine Zoo. Snacks and drinks will be available for purchase. It's only $5 per vehicle, and all of the proceeds go to support the very wonderful Hawthorne Hollow. And secondly, not to be outdone, Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network is having a stewardship day on October 23rd from 1 until 3:30. So if you join us as a volunteer, what will happen is that you'll learn a little bit about invasive species, how to identify them, and what to do with them while we're out in the field. We'll be getting rid of them, and the location is actually at our office on 12th Street in Summers.
Fantastic.
And that's all.
Very good. Nan Calvert, thank you for putting together this fascinating show today, and we look forward to seeing you in November.
This has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
I'm Gregory Bird. Tomorrow on the morning show, two different interviews. One of them with Fabrice Conte-Williamson, who is on the theater faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. We'll be talking with her about their play that is about to open this weekend. It's Margaret Atwood's The Penelopiad, which is a retelling of the Greek myth of the Odyssey, but told through the perspective of the wife of Odysseus, Penelope. Also tomorrow, Colin O'Mara, who is Executive Director and CEO of the National Wildlife Federation. On Friday, Leonard Rubinstein, whose new book is called Perilous Medicine, The Struggle to Protect Healthcare from the Violence of War. It examines the history of those measures, such as the Geneva Convention, designed to safeguard medical practitioners, doctors and nurses and so on, trying to give medical aid in the midst of warfare. And this is something which sadly, tragically, is not always in place. His book chronicles efforts to keep medical practitioners safe, and also chronicles those many troubling instances in which respect for those boundaries has been ignored, sometimes even by countries like the United States. An important book.